It's great to see everybody here today on this beautiful, beautiful Lord's Day. I want to encourage you to have your Bibles open to Psalm 23 at this time. We're going to be looking at Psalm 23 at a few lessons before we look at some other ideas on the subject of shepherding. Now, I'd be remiss if I didn't say happy birthday to Heidi. It's her fifth birthday today. Where does the time go, by the way? When your second child, who just seemed like such a baby not that long ago, is turning 5 years old today. I appreciate the time that I've had here at Monte Vista. I appreciate all your encouragement. These almost 4 years, going on 4 years together here at Monte Vista. And lots changed at Monte Vista also in these almost 4 years. But we've had some consistency in our leadership. A lot of different faces have come in and out of Monte Vista. People who've moved to the area or who have had to move away because of work or for other reasons. We've had members pass away. We've had little ones born to the families here at Monte Vista. We have visitors with us every Sunday. People from the community, people from out of town, Christians and unbelievers, and those who are simply seeking truth. But through all of it, we've had Mitch, we've had Glenn, and we've had Dale. And not a lot of churches can say the same thing about their leadership. A lot of congregations have a revolving door of leaders that come in and out, perhaps because those elders get burnt out. The job is simply too hard on them emotionally, spiritually, or in their families. Maybe they feel like they're not useful anymore and the congregation simply doesn't listen to them. Maybe it was too stressful. Maybe they felt like they were too old or their health was poor. But we've had very good, consistent leadership here at Monte Vista, and I appreciate that very much. So the title of today's lesson is called Shepherd Us. And the reason I call that Shepherd Us is because I don't have a whole lot to say to our elders. They're men far wiser than me. They know what their job is. They know what their role is in this congregation. I want to talk to us. I want to talk to the flock today, which is why I've asked you to open up to Psalm 23. Because while Psalm 23 is typically and understandably applied to the Lord most often, there are some great lessons that I believe we can apply to the relationship between the church and its shepherds, our elders. So let's read Psalm 23 with that in mind. And again, I understand that it is about the Lord, but it's about shepherding, the great shepherd that we have over us. And I think every elder should model himself after that great shepherd. So he says in verse 1 of Psalm 23, "The Lord is my shepherd, I shall not want. He makes me lie down in green pastures. He leads me beside quiet waters. He restores my soul. He guides me in the paths of righteousness for his name's sake." Verse 4. "Even though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death, I fear no evil, for thou art with me. Thy rod and thy staff, they comfort me. Thou dost prepare a table before me in the presence of my enemies. Thou hast anointed my head with oil, and my cup overflows. Surely goodness and loving kindness will follow me all the days of my life, and I will dwell in the house of the Lord forever." Now, elders are not just called elders in the New Testament. They're also called pastors. Notice in Ephesians 4 and verse 11, or in Acts chapter 20 and verse 28, the way that the term pastoring, shepherding, is applied. Now, that these are different terms for the same office, I think, is apparent from Acts chapter 20. Notice this passage with me, if you will, and compare the two verses. In Acts chapter 20 and verse 17, it says that from Miletus, the Apostle Paul sent to Ephesus and called to him the elders of the church. That's the term that we most often apply to our leadership, elders. But then go down to verse 28. "Be on guard for yourselves and for all the flock, among which the Holy Spirit has made you overseers, to shepherd the church of God which he purchased with his own blood." He gathered the elders of the church at Ephesus together. He called them elders at one point and then calls them overseers who shepherd the flock of God. Also notice 1 Peter chapter 5, verses 1 and 2. Therefore, I exhort the elders among you as your fellow elder and witness of the sufferings of Christ and partaker also of the glory that is to be revealed. Shepherd the flock of God among you, exercising oversight, not under compulsion, but voluntarily according to the will of God, and never for sordid gain, but with eagerness. That's the same kind of terminology being applied there, isn't it? The word pastor or shepherd in the New Testament is poimen. And a poimen is not just somebody who feeds the flock. He's not just somebody who comes with a bucket of grain every now and then or opens the gate door to let them out into pasture land. No, the poimen, the shepherd, is one who tends or herds the flock. He's one who leads them, who guides them, and sometimes has to discipline them as well. It is an active job, not a passive one, and it's integral to the survival of every sheep in that flock. The fact that several terms are used for the same office, whether it's pastor or steward, bishop, overseer, elder, simply shows that there are different responsibilities that the elder is supposed to have. But the one that is the most important responsibility is the shepherd. Now, the reason why I say the shepherding or the pastoring is the most important part of an elder's job is for this. In the scriptures, we find that elders are commanded to teach in 1 Timothy 3, verse 2, and in Titus 1 and verse 9. These are qualifications, requirements of our elders, that they be able to teach, that they're knowledgeable in the scriptures, and that they can correct those who are not following God's teaching. But there are other people in the church who are called teachers as well, in Ephesians 4, verse 11, that God gave some as teachers and evangelists and preachers. So even though elders are called to teach, they're not the only ones in a congregation that teach. Elders are also called stewards in Titus 1 and verse 7. And yet there are other people who are called stewards as well. Paul even talks about his own stewardship in 1 Corinthians 9 and verse 17, and in 1 Corinthians 4 verses 1 and 2. A steward is simply somebody who has been put in charge of a job, a servant of sorts. So even though elders are stewards, they're not the only ones in a congregation who steward. Elders oversee in 1 Peter 5 and verse 2. But that oversight can be delegated to others. As we see from the book of Acts, for example, when there was a problem with the daily distribution of food to the widows in the church in Jerusalem, the elders gave oversight of that job to seven individuals who could be trusted with it. And the elders didn't micromanage them. The elders didn't have to be involved in every part of that process. So even though they are overseers of the congregation, that doesn't mean that they're overseers of every little thing that happens in the congregation. Elders are older men, but that doesn't mean they're the only people in a congregation that are older men. A church may, in fact, have many older men in its midst. So elders are older men, but they're not the only ones. So of all the things that elders are asked to do, of all the terms that are applied to the elder, the only one that is exclusive to the elders is to shepherd. There are many things they're called to do. There are many talents that our elders bring to the table. But the one thing that we cannot replace them with, the one thing that we cannot do in their place or in their stead, the one thing that they provide a congregation that nobody else can provide is shepherding. Shepherding. That is why I believe shepherding is the most important responsibility that an elder brings to the table. It is a responsibility singularly assigned to them. So let's go back to Psalm 23. And consider some of the language here, the terminology that's used of the relationship between the psalmist and his great shepherd, who is the Lord. I want to take some of this terminology and apply it to our relationship to our shepherds in the local congregation. Not because, obviously, that I believe our elders in any way supersede the Lord who is our shepherd, but because I believe that our relationship to them mirrors our relationship to God who is our great shepherd. And if they're supposed to be shepherds over the congregation, then who better to emulate than the Lord, who is the great shepherd, according to John chapter 10. There is no greater shepherd than Jesus, no greater shepherd than the Lord. So if they want to be good shepherds of a congregation, then they had better be looking to the best example available. So he says here in Psalm 23, the Lord is my shepherd. I love the terminology of my shepherd. We need to feel a sense of connection to our shepherds. In the same way that we say, the Lord is my Lord. He is my Lord. He is my shepherd. He is my God, my King. We also have to say, have the same idea toward our shepherds. There's an intimacy that's supposed to come with that. There's supposed to be a sense of belonging that when we're a part of Monte Vista, when we're a part of this flock of souls trying to get to heaven, that we feel close to our elders, close enough to say, those are my shepherds. And I look to them for guidance and for love and for discipline. And I appreciate them. Jesus described shepherding in a similar way in John chapter 10. And look at the sense of intimacy that is supposed to be between the sheep and the great shepherd here in John chapter 10. Notice here, beginning in verse 1, truly I say to you, he who does not enter by the door of the fold of the sheep, but climbs up some other way, he's a thief and a robber. But he who enters by the door is a shepherd of the sheep, because there's a trust level, right? Because he's supposed to be there. He enters by the door because he's supposed to enter by the door, and he's welcome there. To him the doorkeeper opens, and the sheep hear his voice, and he calls his own sheep by name, and he leads them. Every one of those sheep has a name, and he knows every single one of them, and he calls them out. When he puts forth all his own, he goes before them. He leads by example. I love that he goes before them. That if he's going to ask the sheep to go to a certain place, if he's going to ask the sheep to pass through the valley of the shadow of death and to trust him that there's pasture land on the other side, then he needs to be willing to walk first. He needs to walk through the valley of the shadow of death first if the sheep are ever going to trust him. If we're going to practice more hospitality or more evangelism, if we're going to do more visiting, more teaching, if we're going to pray more often, love more often, show more compassion and deeper concern for lost souls, our elders have to take the first step in that. And we'll follow them. And we'll follow them if they lead. Now he goes on to say here, down in verse 14, I am the good shepherd, and I know my own, and my own know me. So there's a two-way street there, isn't there? I know my own, but my own also know me. That we need to be willing to open up ourselves to our elders as well. And the next thing that he says in Psalm 23 is interesting too. I shall not want. The Lord is my shepherd. I shall not want. Do we feel the same way in our congregation? That when I have a spiritual need, that it's being met. That if I'm confused by something, or if I have questions about the Bible or about my faith, are the elders getting involved in addressing those questions? Are they sitting down, having lunch with me, meeting with me, talking on the phone, working through my issues? And am I comfortable enough with them to go to them with my needs? There are shepherds, and we shall not want. He makes me lie down in green pastures, and he leads me beside quiet waters. Good leadership fosters a sense of ease in a congregation. Now, not ease in the sense of being lazy or we're letting our guard down against Satan. That's not what I mean. But good leadership lets people know that things are being taken care of. And we're able to have a sense of ease and do what we're supposed to do as a flock while our shepherds do what they're supposed to be doing as a shepherd. What's the flock's job, according to Psalm 23? What is the flock's job in Psalm 23? To go where the shepherd takes them and to receive the nourishment that he provides. That's the flock's job. When you take me to a green pasture, it's not my job to overanalyze it or to criticize it. When you take me to a green pasture and you take me to quiet waters, it is my job to eat and drink. That's the flock's job. And when you have good leadership in a church, The rest of the congregation is able to focus on eating and drinking, on spiritual nourishment. When our leaders take care of things behind the scenes and we trust them, and we trust them, we're able to have great Bible studies, and we're able to pray together, and we're able to have singings together, and we're able to have the sense of ease that is supposed to exist in a flock where we say, we can let our guard down because we know that our shepherds are keeping guard. And we're able to do the things that we're supposed to be doing as a church. Having great worship, practicing great evangelism, having great Bible studies, building great relationships with each other, because we're not constantly suspicious of everything. We're not looking around every corner. Was that a wolf? I heard some walking in the bushes. It's a wolf. I know there's a wolf. I heard it. You know whose job it is to worry about the wolves? The shepherd. It's our job to be a flock. I shall not want. He makes me lie down in green pastures. He leads me beside quiet waters. But it also says that he restores my soul. And he guides me in the paths of righteousness for his name's sake. I like these. Look at these words here. He makes me. He leads me. He restores me. He guides me. What's the kind of theme that runs through all of those words? These are action words. They're proactive. He's involved in my life. And these are not reactions, okay? These are not reactions. Because pastors are out in front of the flock, and they know the flock, and they're familiar with the flock. They anticipate conflicts and needs that come up, and growth. And I also like the idea that the future doesn't sneak up on them. Good shepherds aren't wondering what's on the next horizon line. What's around the next bend? Good shepherds don't go, I sure hope there's going to be a watering hole somewhere in the next 10 miles. Whew, we're getting real desperate here. I'm just leading on a hope and a prayer, that's all. Good shepherds don't hope the church grows. They do everything they can to make it possible for the church to grow, to provide all the tools necessary for the church to grow. You know, they don't hope for church growth and church unity and church happiness in the same way that we hope the Cardinals will win a Super Bowl one of these days. That's not the same kind of hope that they have. It's not like this blind hope, like, well, someday we'll grow, and I guess someday we won't fight with each other, and someday we'll deal with all conflicts. No, they're leading, they're guiding, they're restoring, they're making. Right? He makes me lie down. It's not an option. The good shepherd makes me lie down. That's what good leadership does. Good leadership says, where are we going to be in 5 years or in 10 years? Good leadership also looks at itself and says, we're a good unit of leaders right now, but 5 years from now, 10 years from now, 20 years, who's going to be an elder at Monte Vista in 5 years? Who's going to be serving as an elder in 10 years? Who are we trying to help grow and nurture and train so that when the time comes that they are needed, that we won't have to be scrambling around trying to find someone to be a shepherd here? That's what good leadership does. But good leadership also has a rod and a staff. And that's the part that we should never forget about. Thy rod and thy staff, he says, they comfort me. Now let's think about that. The rod and the staff, they can be used for different things, can't they? Now, they can be used to discipline the sheep when the sheep are out of line. And that's for the sheep's own good. Because sometimes the sheep doesn't realize that it's going into danger. A sheep might wander off this direction away from the flock, following something, eating its way into danger. And a swift little prod from the rod gets the sheep back in line. And the sheep needs it. The sheep needs it. But I think we need to be careful. Let's not look at our elders as just disciplinarians. They don't use the rod and the staff just to poke us and discipline us and goad us back into order. Because what does the psalmist say about your rod and your staff? He says, your rod and your staff are actually a comfort to me. Now, it's comforting knowing that you have the rod and the staff in case I need to be disciplined, so that if I make a mistake, if I'm the one falling away, I can feel comfortable knowing that you'll hold me accountable. And I want that. I want the accountability. And that's true of me. That's true of everybody. Of preachers, of deacons, their families, whether you're in a glass house or not. If I preach a stinker, I want someone to come poke me and say, try to do that again, Ryan. And I've been poked before. All three of them have poked me at some point. One of them more often than the others. But we want that, don't we? And isn't it comforting to know that when you make a mistake, somebody will lovingly, gently bring you back from it? But the rod and the staff are also protective. The rod and the staff, yes, they're used to discipline us, but more often than not, they're used to keep the bad out. To keep the wolves and the lions and the wolves in sheep's clothing away from the flock. Don't see our elders as just disciplinarians. Rather, we need to see our pastors as protectors. When the elders want to talk to us about something, don't be scared of them. That little elder's room on the side of the hallway there. I think sometimes we enter it with such trepidation. Ooh, the elders need to talk to me. The elders called me. An elder is coming to my house. Well, you know, sometimes the elders just want to say hi. And they just want to visit and see how you're doing. Let's not be terrified of our elders. Let's move on to another passage, though. In the New Testament, in Hebrews chapter 13, verse 17. It says here in Hebrews chapter 13 and verse 17, obey your leaders and submit to them, for they keep watch over your souls as those who will give an account. Let them do this with joy and not with grief, for this would be unprofitable for you. Let's look at some key phrases in this passage now. He uses the words obey and submit. These are four-letter words in our vernacular today, aren't they? Obey, submit. Nobody likes submission. We're Americans after all. We're independent, free thinkers. We do what we want. No one tells me what to do. And these are not seen as ugly words to the Apostle Peter. Strong elders seek input and they seek participation from the congregation. So the idea behind Hebrews 13, verse 17. The idea here is not that our leaders run the church like some kind of a dictator. They run the church with input. They want to know what we need. But when a decision has been made, the decision has been made. And we need to set aside stubborn individualism and submit when a decision has been made. Submission, by the way, is an essential element of the Christian spirit. Whether we like it or not, as Americans or with whatever sensibility we want to apply to the term, submission is a key Christian idea. Jesus submitted to the needs of his bride, the church, by dying for her on a cross. Jesus submitted to his disciples by washing their feet in the Gospel of John. Jesus submitted to all of our needs, according to the book of Philippians, by leaving the side of God and coming in the form of a bondservant. 1 Corinthians chapter 11, beginning in verse 1, talks about the way that we all submit to something. Wives submit to their husbands. Husbands submit to Christ. Christ submits to the Father. So submission is not an ugly thing. And when the apostle in the book of Hebrews says to submit, or when Peter the apostle says in 1 Peter chapter 5 that our leaders lead, not lording it over us, but leading as they should, we need to take that seriously. The reason why is because they keep watch over our souls. A pastor's primary responsibility is spiritual in nature, and it is not managerial or administrative. And I'll put it this way. In life, we have plenty of managers, and we have plenty of administrators. We have a boss. Our kids have a principal at school or a vice principal. We are surrounded by managers and administrators of all kinds. We can get plenty of those in the world. Our pastors have to be something different. Our pastors have to be something different than the model of micromanagerial leadership that we see in almost every institution and organization that we can be a part of. Our pastors have to be different. And we have to see them as being different also. That their primary job is not carpet color and pews and budgets. Their primary job is right here. My soul, your soul. The souls of potential converts who are hearing the gospel for the first time. The souls of people who are on the edge of falling away from their faith. The souls of the young, the souls of the old. That's their job. And they'll give an account as well. Leading a congregation of souls comes with a heavy dose of judgment. No elder should forget that. It should not be taken lightly. They'll have to give an account for what they've done. Now, this doesn't mean that everybody who falls away from their faith, that it's the elder's fault. It doesn't mean if somebody falls away from their faith that the elder has to take the blame for it. But on the judgment day, our elders will have to give an explanation. They won't take the blame for it because we all make our choices, but our elders will have to give an explanation. How did you lead? How did you discipline? How did you guide? What was your example like? They'll have to give an account. But he does say with joy. And it's just like with preaching. In James chapter 3 and verse 1, it says, "Let not many of you be teachers, because you'll incur a stricter judgment." Boy, if you ever want to become a preacher or a Bible class teacher here at church, you need to read James 3, verse 1 over and over and over again. But even with that being said, even though there is a stricter judgment for being a preacher or a teacher, and even though you'll have to give an account as an elder, none of those things should discount or somehow neutralize the joy that comes behind those responsibilities. Not everything about being an elder is easy. I know that from talking to them and talking to other elders in the past. But I think that there are moments for them. There are moments that make it worth it. Sometimes those moments are full of tears. Sometimes they're full of laughs, full of victories and glory. There's sometimes very little moments. They might feel fleeting at first. But those moments make it worth it to do all that hard work. We want to be shepherded. And maybe this is the only thing I really want to say to our elders this morning, because most of this is about us, our relationship to them. But I want to give a message to you. We want to be shepherded. A flock wants a shepherd. We want to be disciplined. We want to be taught. We want to be led. And when you look at a church that doesn't have elders, because we've all been on vacation before, we all have family members who are members elsewhere that don't have elders. We've all maybe been a member of a congregation that didn't have elders. Good leadership that was in place. When a church doesn't have elders, there's this feeling of listlessness. Waywardness. Things just aren't getting done. Because when you take the shepherd out of the flock, what do sheep do by nature? Mill about. Right? That is what sheep do by nature. They mill about and disperse. And they don't even realize that it's happening. They're just following the path of the food on the ground, the smell of the grass in the air, and one smells grass over here, and another smells grass over there, and they're not looking around. They don't care. They don't notice. That's a church without leadership. We want to be shepherded because we will never be the best kind of congregation until we are a congregation with great leadership. And while our pastors have an obligation to nurture us and to lead us to a place of growth, it's our responsibility to let them do it. It's our responsibility to let them into our lives. And this is what I was saying earlier about the sheep know the shepherd's voice, So as much as the shepherd knows the sheep also know the shepherd. Maybe one of the reasons that you might be struggling in your relationship to our elders is because you haven't let them into your life. Because you haven't gotten to know them. The invitation, I'm sure, is always open. They're happy to talk on the phone, go to lunch, get a coffee. I know them. It's their personality. They'll do that. We need to be able to enter their lives also. And don't keep our elders at arm's length, while all the while we might be having real spiritual problems that we're not willing to tell them about. And if all you're doing, here's the challenge, my friends. If all you're doing is shaking their hand on Sunday and smiling and saying, yeah, we're doing fine, then don't get mad at them. Don't get shocked when spiritual shipwreck happens to you. If they don't know you have a need, there's nothing they can do about it. And we'll thrive under strong leadership, personally as well as a congregation. Talent, creativity, and zeal, these amazing things. This is the fire of a congregation, isn't it? This is the fuel in the engine of a congregation of talent, creativity, and zeal. These things are never fully optimized until they're given direction by good leadership. Because you can be a very zealous person, but you can be all over the place. And you can be a very talented person, but you have nothing to do with that talent. And you can be a very creative person, but maybe your creativity is taking you to a bad place spiritually. Leadership optimizes those things. Leadership gets the fuel efficiency in the engine of the congregation working at max. That's what good leadership does. And even very dynamic individuals can scatter and fail spiritually without direction. In Matthew chapter 26, verses 31 through 35, Jesus predicted that when he would be taken away, what would happen to his disciples? You will be scattered like sheep without a shepherd. You will be scattered. Now Peter jumps and says, well, I'll never run. I'll never betray you or deny you. Guess what? Even a dynamic, talented, zealous, incredible individual like Peter, even he scattered when the shepherd was taken away. And if it can happen to Peter and the other apostles, it can happen to us as well. And we'll end on this point. Nothing takes the place of familiarity. Like Jesus said, the sheep will only follow a shepherd if they know his voice, which is a two-way relationship. We need to see the elders as human beings. Yes, they're elders. And yes, they have a rod and a staff. They discipline. They have the authority from God to lead this congregation how they see fit, as long as it's by the Scriptures. But they're humans also. Their husbands, their fathers, their grandfathers. Some are retired, some are workers. They're making homes, planting gardens. But you know, they're also vulnerable. And they have humor. And they have uniqueness. We need to be careful not to see our elders with such stiff reverence for the office that we forget about the person who's occupying the office. Now, if you're not a Christian here this morning, you really ought to be. Listen to the words of the great shepherd in Mark 16, verse 16, who says, he who believes and is baptized shall be saved, but he who does not believe shall be condemned. And if the invitation of the gospel applies to you in any way today, then please let it be known by coming forward as we stand and sing.